We're just finishing a session, a study session, Genzo-e, an eye treasury assembly, gathering of the mind to look at this essay by Dogen Zenji about Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, the Bodhisattva of great compassion, Kanon, Kanzeon, Guanyin, Chenrezig, Kanjizai Bosatsu. She has many names, and always manifests great care and compassion. And as you may know, sometimes she's depicted with 1,000 arms, 1,000 hands, with an eye in each hand. So the wisdom eye that discerns what's happening, and the hand to help. We have that phrase, turning a blind eye. So this bodhisattva never turns a blind eye, because there's eyes throughout her body, all over her body, throughout her body, wherever her body reaches, eyes of wisdom and hands of compassion lend a helping hand. Here's one picture. This is the 42-armed version of Avalokiteshvara. Each hand has a different implement to help in some different way. And then sometimes she's depicted with 1,000 more, radiating in all directions, riding on a dragon, emerging from the ocean. So mainly we've been studying Dogen's comments on this story about hands and eyes throughout the body. And Dogen's finished that, and now we have a postscript at the end of this essay. And in Sishin we call this closing remarks. So Dogen conveniently left us some closing remarks. He says, since Buddha Dharma was brought from India to China, many Buddhas and ancestors have talked about Avalokiteshvara, but none of them match Yunyan and Dao Wu, our heroes in this story. That's why I'm presenting only this case now. So, but then it seems that after he presented this story, he thought, but there's some other really great stories about Avalokiteshvara that while we're on the subject, let's bring them up. So today we can bring them up. Yongjia, Great Master Junjue, said in the classic Zen poem, Song of Realizing the Way. It's one of those early Zen poems. He said, not to see even one dharma is called a Tathagata, or not to see even one thing is called the Thus Come One, the Buddha. This is the one who perceives with freedom, which is a name of Avalokiteshvara in Japanese, Kanjizai. So in this poem, he says, not to see even one thing is a Thus Come Buddha. This is Kanjizai Bosatsu, one who perceives with freedom. So a lot could be said about that, but kind of unusual that Buddhas don't see a single thing. And that this bodhisattva with an eye in every hand, she never turns a blind eye, but at the same time she never sees a single thing. because there's nothing outside of her. Wherever the body reaches is hands and eyes. Her body extends everywhere, hands and eyes meeting everything, nothing outside. She doesn't see a single thing, but that's the way she benefits everyone inconceivably. And then Dogen says, this confirms that the Tathagata and Avalokiteshvara both reveal their own bodies, but they are not separate bodies. In other words, Avalokiteshvara, this bodhisattva of compassion, and the Buddha reveal these different forms, but they're really not separate. And then he says, Mayu and Linji had dialogues on the true hands and eyes. It's one of the many dialogues on Avalokiteshvara. So here's the story of Mayu and Linji. Linji is in Japanese Rinzai, the founder of the Rinzai school of Zen in China. And Mayu is known to us as the Buddha ancestor at the end of the Genjo Koan, who's fanning himself. That was Zen master Baoche of Mount Mayu. Who, when asked, well, how do we practice? How do we realize, practice and realize what needs to be practiced and realized? Mayu just kept fanning himself. So in this story, Mayu is like kind of like on pilgrimage, and he's going to Linji's temple to meet the teacher Linji. And Mayu goes to Linji's on the teaching seat in the Dharma hall, and Mayu walks up and says, of the thousand hands and eyes of the Bodhisattva of great compassion, which one is the true eye? Provocative question. Of the thousand hands and eyes of this great Bodhisattva, which one is the true eye? Linji said, you've just repeated the question back, of the thousand eyes of the Bodhisattva of great compassion, which is the true eye? Speak quickly, quickly. So this is sometimes in these stories, one of the Zen techniques is they turn it back. They turn the question back on the asker in this dynamic interplay that we call a conversation. And what's that about? We could say it's about not giving a definitive answer that then just satisfies the questioner. It's like, oh, I asked a question and I got an answer and now I can go away. Somebody else want to ask a question? And like just going about our day like that, it's breaking up that whole kind of interchange in this new way. Someone asks a question and the receiver just asks it right back and says, speak quickly, answer, you. So Mayu is sharp and ready for anything. So he immediately grabs Linji and pulls him off the teaching seat and sits down there. And kind of throws Linji on the floor. They were kind of rough characters in the old days in China. And teacher Linji gets up and kind of dusts himself off and says, I don't understand. Please explain. And Mayu thought he was done, maybe. He thought, that was really dramatic. Glad we finished that one off. But Linji dusts himself off and comes back with the question, I don't understand. Mayu hesitates. I mean, there's more? And at his hesitation, Linji grabs him off the Dharma seat, throws him on the ground, and gets back on the seat. So that's sometimes how these ancients tried to manifest the way really very directly, spontaneously, without hesitation. Like when we're asleep at night and the pillow slips out from under our head and we just kind of reach back in the dark and pull it back towards us and fall back to sleep. They act in such spontaneous and compassionate ways. Does it seem compassionate to drag someone off the seat and throw them on the floor? I think these guys enjoyed it. I imagine they enjoyed it. Who did that? That's a good question. So that's another story about Avalokiteshvara's, which is the true hand and eye of this Bodhisattva of great compassion. It's very similar to the story we've been studying, just demonstrating the true hand and eye in the immediacy of the moment in this dramatic interchange. So then Dogen says, also Yun Men, the great Chinese ancestor, Yun Men spoke of Avalokiteshvara, who sees form and clarifies the mind, hears sound and realizes the way. And he doesn't quote the story, but this is case number 82 in the Book of Serenity. And this is one of the more unusual Zen stories, amongst the unusual Zen stories. We could spend a week looking at this one sometime. But the story goes like this. Yun Men, Cloud Gate, the old ancestor, one time was giving a talk and he said, see forms and clarify the mind, hear sounds and realize the way. The Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara bought a cheap rice cake with her one penny, but when she released it from her hand, it turned out to be a jelly donut. What's up with these guys? I think this one's harder than reaching back for a pillow at night. So, seeing forms, clarify the mind. Hearing sounds, realize the way. In the completely open mind of Zazen, we just receive the colors and shapes before us and clarify the mind. That is clarifying the mind. We hear the sounds without adding anything extra. That motorcycle is our mind. It's not actually out there. Thus, we realize the way. So seeing forms directly, clarify the mind, hear sounds directly, or realize the way. And then he goes on to maybe, how does that work? Well, it's like this Bodhisattva of great compassion, with one of her thousand hands, she's got just a penny left. And she goes to the refreshment stand and offers her coin and expecting to receive a cheap rice cake because she only has a penny. A simple rice cake's fine, I'm just a little hungry. So she receives the rice cake, but when she opens her hand, it's a magnificent strawberry jelly donut that costs at least $1.75. Totally unexpected. He only offered a penny. So this is, I think, quite a dynamic story. And in the way the Chinese is, I think it could be translated in various ways. And in the different English translations, they almost interpret the story differently with different translations. One way that it's interpreted is like when she bought this plain old simple rice cake, and then when she released it, she's like, oh, okay, I got it, but I'll just let it go. As soon as she let it go, a great jelly donut appeared. In other words, like, she got something simple, and she was fine getting something simple, and she just released that without saying, I wish I had enough to buy a jelly donut. When she released it from her hand, a jelly donut dropped into her hand. That's one way to hear it. Another is just when she opened her hand, she bought it and received it, and when she opened it to look at it, it wasn't what she thought it was. It was much more sweet. Those are a little bit different. Yeah. And one translation even says, when she threw it away, she received the rice cake and just tossed it over her shoulder, a jelly donut appeared. Maybe it's all in the spirit of letting go, right? She let go of what she thought she had, something simple and plain, and in that letting go, something magnificent appeared. And maybe also it's about not having any expectations. All you can get for one penny is a simple, plain rice cake. So I guess that's what I'm going to get today. It's more like, well, let's just do the interaction. I give you a coin, and you know, it says up on the menu, plain rice cakes for one penny. But I'll give you my penny and just see what I get. I'll toss out a tile. See if some jade comes. I'll ask Lin Ji, which is the true hand and eye, and see what I get. Oh, I got the same question back. Whoa, that wasn't expected. And when Lin Ji gave the same question back, I imagine he did not expect to be suddenly thrown off his seat. But how wonderful to be ready to be thrown off a seat. So this is how this hands and eyes function, I think. We could say they're like completely ready for whatever arises. That's the openness of this bodhisattva of great compassion. She doesn't turn a blind eye. She just receives what comes, and then there's a spontaneous response. Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara bought a cheap rice cake with her penny, but it turned out to be an elegant pastry. And Dogen says, also, Bhaijang, great ancestor Bhaijang, spoke of Avalokiteshvara entering reality, entering the principle. And so it's basically, Dogen seems to have this encyclopedic mind of every Zen story that ever happened. So in his postscript here, he's maybe saying for us in future generations, I didn't have time to talk about all these stories of Avalokiteshvara, but I'm just going to mention a few more, and you can look at them later. So that's what we're doing. So the story of Bhaijang. Dogen doesn't even quote these stories here, right? We have to look them up elsewhere. Bhaijang, remember, this is Hyakujo. And who's known for setting up the style of Zen monasteries in the early days of Zen in China. And he was the one, at least it's attributed to him, that he set up the style of like retreat places in the mountains where they would grow their own vegetables and have their own chickens. I don't know about the chickens. Maybe a little bit like Yukoji,
Like,
instead of being down in the city where they're supported by the government, he's like, things get kind of sketchy when we get all caught up in, like, government support and stuff. We have to maybe, they push us too much to, like, change our freewheeling style. So let's set up some Zen centers in the mountains, and we'll farm and we'll grow our own food. This was a really new thing in Buddhism in that time, because in India the monks weren't allowed to, like, dig in the earth because they might hurt an earthworm. So they just had to rely on their begging rounds. But in China, they're like, well, I think we're gonna be really careful to take care of any worms we find, but it's okay. We're gonna farm anyway, and have this simple kind of self-sufficient life. It really was like changed the whole sort of flavor of practice, and it also made for like work as practice. It's a part of the Zen style is everyday activity of work as practice. So Baijiang he's the one who set that up, and he's also the one who's known for saying, a day without work is a day without eating. An early Zen saying. And apparently he was like literally would practice that way. At one point when he got really old, the monks in the monastery was like, he's always working, we gotta give him a break, and he's not gonna stop. So the only way we can get him to stop is let's hide his tools, his hoe and rake and so on. Let's hide him, and then he'll just rest. But when he couldn't find his tools, he just stopped eating. He's like, if I can't help take care of things here, then I don't really deserve to have the next meal. Very strict with himself. So he became known for that. They gave him back the tools after that. Let him work and eat. In a way, maybe that's Baijiang's hands and eyes manifesting there. It's like, I don't want to just rely. I don't want to get a free ride here. I don't want to rely on others. I want to help take care of everything here for others and for all of us in the community. That was his compassionate spirit. That was his hand that held the hoe. And the other monks in the monastery also were always out in the fields with their hoes. So one day they were all doing this communal work together. It's called, sometimes it's called Fuxin, I think is the term. It's like this community work, like Samu. But Fuxin means, universal invitation, something like that. And it means that everyone's invited to the work period and kind of expected to participate, including the abbot. So the resident teacher at Compassion Light Temple here demonstrated this very beautifully, this sesshin, by stepping into the kitchen and being Tenzo, cooking the meals for all of us. So wonderful, humble, an example. And Baijiang went out to the fields to work. And at Green Goat's Farm, we have once a week in the summer, they skip morning zazen and they go out before light, and everybody picks up a hoe and weeds the fields, including the abbot, whose tasks are many and maybe would have other things to do instead, but everyone joins in. Fuxin, universal invitation. So one day they're all working in the fields at Baijiang's, and then back at the Dharma Hall, the drum sounds, which is like the signal for lunch. And this one monk, when he hears the drum, immediately throws down his hoe and laughing loudly goes straight back to the Dharma Hall. So in the distance, bum bum, or ding 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 ding, and he throws the hoe. Ho, ho, ho! And goes, makes a beeline for the Dharma Hall. Kind of unusual in their dignified, silent work period. And Master Baijong says, "What a splendid thing that is." It is Avalokiteshvara's gate of entry into reality. This action of throwing down the hoe and laughing and returning to the dining hall. This is Kanon's gate of entry into truth. When Baijong returns to the temple himself, he asks that monk, "What truth did you see there to make you behave as you did when you threw down the hoe and ran back?" The monk said, "Oh, at that time, I was hungry, so when I heard the sound of the meal drum, I went back for something to eat." "What profound truth did you see that you acted so unusually there?" "Oh, I was hungry, so I delightedly, gleefully laughed and went straight to the dining hall." And then Baijong, when he heard that response, laughed loudly himself. Oh! This story was recorded in the ancient records and transmitted for over 1,000 years to us today. Amazing. Such things can happen in this world. The profound truth of Avalokiteshvara's entry gate. When the meal gong goes, we throw down the hoe and run to the kitchen. In a way, these are all very similar stories, aren't they? This is how the Zen ancestors talk about the function of great compassion. Is that compassionate? Everyone else is still working in the fields. Shouldn't you stay and support them working there until they're all ready to go? And gently put down the hoe, clean it off, and quietly return. So throwing the hoe and laughing and running for the hall. This function of great compassion has no particular fixed forms. It can appear as spontaneous appearance of a jelly donut. Can appear as just going to do the next thing when it's time. The appropriate response to the occasion at hand. So Dogen says, in the assembly described by the Shirangama Sutra, so for those scholars studying this, it's a mistranslation. It's not the Lankavatara Sutra. It's the Shirangama Sutra, which in Chinese, the characters are almost the same. So the assembly described in the Shirangama Sutra, there's Avalokiteshvara of complete mastery. And we talked about that on maybe the first day of Sesshin. In the Shirangama Sutra, there's a whole section on how Avalokiteshvara realized the way through hearing. All these bodhisattvas, through their different senses, open to the way. But she's the sound regarder. So she enters through sound. And, you know, summing it up, she says in the Shirangama Sutra, "Because I do not contemplate sounds themselves, actually, but I contemplate the contemplator of sounds. That's how I enable beings throughout the 10 directions who are suffering and in distress to realize liberation by contemplating their sounds of reciting my name." So I realized that when I'm listening to the sound of the bird or the car, that I'm actually open to the sound, but then I look back even further, I turn the light of awareness back to the contemplator. Who's hearing that sound, actually? And when I look for who's hearing that sound, I can't find anyone but just vast space, totally aware, with no boundaries or edges, in which sounds come forth. And through that practice, I offer that practice to others in distress who attain liberation by contemplating their sounds. When they call on my name, when they're in distress and they say, Avalokiteshvara, great compassion, please help me. When they say that, and then somebody may look back and say, who just asked that? In their great distress, and maybe they're relieved from great distress the moment they look back in such a way. There's another practice that one could do. When in great distress, one could ask, who's actually in great distress? I think it's kind of the same practice. One of the Zen ancestors thought he'd had enough of practicing Zen in one place, and he was like, there's nothing more to learn here. So he left, and rather hurriedly, and as he left, he stubbed his toe on a rock in a big way, and kind of shouted out in pain. Stubbing toe is one of the worst kind of like sudden pains, isn't it? Like such sharp, direct pain. And it stubbed his toe in this great pain, realized through his past practice, or remembered to kind of like look and like, such intense pain, but whose pain is this? I can't find anyone whose pain this is. And in that moment, he kind of like had this opening and awakening. Oh, actually, there's more to the story than I thought. And then he turned around and went back to the Zen temple. So, in distress, we can always ask, who is this happening to? And I think even if we just do it a little bit, I think it starts to loosen up the situation from this fixed sense of this, it's happening to me, okay, don't bother me. Well, who is me? Who is this me? In the assembly described in the Lotus Sutra, Dogen says, there's Avalokiteshvara who manifests the universal gate. It's chapter 25 of the Lotus Sutra is called the Kanzeon Bosatsu Fumon Bon. So the universal gate of Kanzeon Bodhisattva. Universal gateway means everybody can enter this gate of being aided by Avalokiteshvara's great compassion. And that's the sutra where she manifests her body in these 33 different ways that we talked about. Whatever way is appropriate to help people, she can manifest. Avalokiteshvara, described by these ancients, all work together. Or the Avalokiteshvaras, described by these ancients, they all work and practice together with all the Buddhas, the mountains, rivers, and earth. Although working together with Buddhas, mountains, rivers, and earth, these Avalokiteshvaras are still only one or two manifestations of countless hands and eyes. Any comments or questions? Jelly donuts, pillows, hands, eyes.
Yes. I'm a wheelbarrow.
A wheelbarrow.
Yeah. Now, I had an interesting thought the other day during the work period I shared with Steve. I was pushing my wheelbarrow up to the compost heap to throw the the weeds that we were picking into the compost pile. And it was like a cool little sense that it has, like, I'm pushing the wheelbarrow, but, like, who's pushing me? Kind of a sense, you know? And it was cool to sort of kind of drop into that play for a moment.
Yeah.
And it kind of made me think of Superman, you know, the good Superman, like Christopher Reeve, like the real Superman. And the first movie, I think the first time that Lois realizes that Clark is Superman, the first time Lois realizes that Superman is kind of supporting her, mm-hmm. so she's falling from this building, and Superman captures her, and he says, "Don't worry, I've got you." And then she asks, "Well, then, who's got you?" And so maybe, like, when we're in our moments of suffering, we're more, like, identified with the Lois character. And we forget that Superman's got our back. Or maybe
we're even identified with the Superman character, but we forgot that someone's got us. Yeah. We're so involved in helping with great compassion. And, like, I got it under control. I can help. I'm helping these folks, but actually, am I doing it? who's helping me to help them? And that's like that turning the light back. Or we could also say, like, the wheelbarrow is pulling you forward to the compost pile. Or the other day I was walking on the beach and I just tried on the perception of walking along where the water was already a lot of motion there, where the water is meeting the sand, and walking there. So in that moving fluid kind of place, I started seeing maybe it's actually like I'm standing still and the beach is like moving under me. And my perception shifted so strongly that it really seemed that way, to the point of I almost had to like stop and sit down. Whoa! Really? And if I stop walking, the earth stops turning. And I start walking again, the earth. So it's like, and who's to say? I mean, the earth is actually spinning very fast. And so it's just this limited perspective that, like, I'm moving. And sometimes it's the other way around. Yeah, sometimes we're riding in a boat and we think that the shore is moving, but if we keep our eyes closely on the boat, we can see that the boat moves. There's no fixed way that all this is working. So great to notice that when pushing a wheelbarrow. Anyone else or anything else about the hands and eyes of great compassion? We've said a lot this past few days about the hands and eyes of great compassion. And in the end, it just seems that it's very, very ordinary, that function, like reaching back for a pillow at night. The Zen understanding of great compassion is just being present, awake, open and ready, and then we meet in a situation like that. Yes.
Here's kind of what you're talking about is somewhat how perception can kind of be misconstrued. Misunderstood, and then understood in another. So I was thinking about your pennies, you know, because pennies, they don't even buy rice cracker anymore.
Yeah.
Let alone a jelly donut. So, but then I work as a carpenter. I go to Home Depot a lot, and I realized a couple years ago that the most inexpensive washer is, I think now it's 5 cents. You can't get a washer maybe three cents, a really tiny one.
So nothing for a penny anymore.
But if you put a hole in it.
But to fill that hole with jelly would cost a pretty penny.
It's funny, yeah, because it's actually less material.
Yeah. That's what I think of about, you know, like organic produce, which theoretically should cost less because there's less fertilizer to buy, and pesticides cost so much more. So these strange phenomena are why, you know, one of the Zen ancestors said something like, or somebody asked one of the Zen ancestors something like, what's the great meaning of the Buddha Dharma? And he said, he responded, what's the price of rice in Lu Ling? And like, all these interconnected phenomena, fluctuating prices, and for ordinary things, and how it's dependent on all of us. The price of a washer is like, if people will pay that, they'll charge it. Yeah, we could boycott washer buying, and maybe like the price goes down. So seems like the great meaning of Buddha Dharma is how everybody together is creating the whole world. The price of rice in a particular city, and the price of washers at Home Depot, and whether you get an ordinary rice cake or a jelly donut, it's like no one person can make that happen. I think this is partly why, you know, this story of, if Avalokiteshvara just thinks, I'm going to just pay this penny and get this plain rice cake. It's so simple. That's the way it works in this world, right? And then he pays the penny and, no, it doesn't actually work that way. It's totally unexpected. And is that because someone kindly saw the Bodhisattva of great compassion there and said, she deserves more than like just a plain rice cake. I know she's only got a penny, but let's give her a jelly donut.